Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
I'm Chris Sidorick, and this is a special hour of Radio Boston. As we head into the July 4th holiday weekend, we want to bring you some pure summer joy. We know that the pandemic hasn't gone away, and we all have to take appropriate care, but we can hopefully still enjoy the summer. And what's more joyous, not to mention more July 4th, than the Boston Pops? Of course, that didn't happen on the Esplanade last year. And it was the first time in 25 years that Keith Lockhart did not conduct the Pops for the July 4th extravaganza. So last year, Radio Boston's Tiziana Deering
crying
asked
into
him
my
where
beer
he'd be on the 4th.
I
This year, however, Keith and the entire Boston Pops are back. There'll be the traditional fireworks spectacular on the Esplanade, but the Pops will perform in Tanglewood for a reduced crowd. But it's their first live audience and Tanglewood's first live show since the pandemic. We checked in with Keith as he was preparing for the performance, and I started by asking him how he's doing and whether he'd been right about how he'd spend the last 4th of July.
Well, that's proved to be prescient, because indeed I was crying into my beer for most of the 4th of July. I did spend it with some friends up in New Hampshire and tried really hard not to think about how I'd spent the last 25 of them.
Yeah,
I'm doing okay. I mean, as you know, it's been a extremely difficult year for performing artists, not only in practical matters like, employment, but also just spiritually, because, you know, what we're all about is engaging with audiences, and it's been well nigh impossible, even with, you know, all the virtual efforts we've made. There's still nothing like actually being able to connect with people live. On the other hand, it's a upbeat kind of time, because we're seeing things changing. They're slower than I'd like to be, but nonetheless, they seem to be going in the right direction.
So I do want to focus on that for just another minute. For folks who aren't in the performing arts, how would you characterize what was lost over the last 15, 16 months for you and your musicians?
Well, for us, it was the ability to do what we do. I mean, the basis of our profession, our professional lives, our employment, but on top of that, also just our spirits and our souls are about live performing arts, which have to do with not just playing your instrument, but playing your instrument for people and being there in a real-time shared emotional experience. And it's very hard to describe how this is something that I've done, pretty much every week you can imagine since I was 18 or 19 years old. And all of a sudden to have a year and a half of your life in which that's not even a possibility is something that I don't think any of us imagined. I think, you know, the greater thought is, though, you know, what has been lost over this period of time for all of us. And I think it's that sense of community, that sense of congregation and engagement. And I hope that people are very desperate to regain that, and that it really hurts to not be able to share these experiences with our fellow humans, because that's, of course, what we need to be able to bounce back. We need an audience to bounce back with us.
I'm curious, as we are hopefully starting to move out of this and return to something that resembles a new normal, is there anything from the last 15, 16 months that you want to keep? Any lessons learned or opportunities that maybe were outside the box, hadn't been thought of before the pandemic, that you'd like to hold on to as we reopen?
Well, there are. I mean, you know, we all grasp desperately for silver linings, but I think there are a couple. One is that performing arts organizations, especially orchestras, were very much 19th century sort of creatures. And we've learned an awful lot about online engagement, about virtual presentation of our product. We had to pivot rather quickly to, you know, producing videos as opposed to producing concerts. And I think we've learned a lot about how to do that. And though, as I said, it's a poor substitute for actual live engagement, at least it allows us to get the message out more broadly and to, a wider swath of potential audience members. And I think going forward, we're going to see that used as a tool along with simultaneously side by side with live performance. I have a feeling that our concert hall will always be expanded that way, and that's a good thing. I think another good thing is that our approach, at least at the Boston Symphony and the Boston Pops, was to ask our players to engage with the audience one at a time. And there were so many homemade videos of people practicing in their basements and playing for and with their kids, and that sort of thing. And I think the audience, you know, we tend to market the path of least resistance, which is to put the conductor's face on the brochure. And I think the audience has a much better idea of who those other 100 people on that stage are now than they did before. And if I may, I think the third thing is, I think I will never again take what I've been blessed to be able to do for a living for the last 35 years or so. I don't think I'll ever be able to take it for granted again. I will always be so deeply grateful to actually be able to put on concert clothes and walk onto a stage that it's going to be hard to have a grumpy day.
What is it about the live audience that makes it a different experience, do you think?
There's a couple of things, and they're kind of hard to put your finger on directly, because so much of it is really kind of a visceral reaction. It's amazing that, you know, as you know, as a conductor, I'm very used to performing with my back to the audience. You know, as a instrumental performer, I had many more opportunities to face the audience. But you can always tell an audience is there. You can tell an audience is with you. You can sense their presence, and they actually do affect and shape the performance. And there's a practical side to this too. Our art, specifically orchestras, orchestral music, whether it's the Boston Pops or the Boston Symphony playing Mahler, is about that live engagement. If you just want to tell somebody, if somebody says, I really want to see a video performance of Pick a Piece, Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, I can direct you to YouTube, and there are many fine, fully filmed performances of that symphony there. But the point of music is seeing it be made, seeing the sweat, understanding that these dots on a page are only a beginning, and there's a wide variety of interpretive nuance that is brought to that. And by being there, being a part of that score being realized. And that's where, you know, from our point of view as performers, we really need to get back to touching people one at a time, or a thousand at a time, or in the case of the 4th of July, a 500,000 at a time.
I want to come back to something we talked to you about last year. Last year, July 4th, we were a couple of months out from George Floyd being killed. There were protests and demonstrations across the country, and we talked about the complicated nature of July 4th as we become more honest about our own history. And that obviously holds true more than ever this year. And I want to play a little bit of sound for you. This is from an interview we did recently with Reverend Mariama White Hammond, a pastor at New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, talking about July 4th and what it means from an honest perspective.
Just sort of celebrating July 4th and saying, you know, we should all just fit into that, misses the fact that the history of this country is complex for a lot of us, and that July 4th wasn't real freedom for a lot of us. That while some people were celebrating their freedom, some of us were, our ancestors were working the fields.
Our federal government just recently recognized Juneteenth as an official holiday a few weeks ago. How are you thinking about that? And does the meaning of July 4th, has that changed at all for you over the nearly three decades you've been a part of the celebration?
This has really been this year, and I think I'm not just saying that because I've been lucky enough or unlucky enough to be here for it, has been so transformative. Either of these events, either the pandemic or the really heightened, for the first time in years to this level, awareness of the flaws within our system and their real life impact on people who supposedly enjoy the protections of being an American. These two things coming together has really created a fascinating energy surge. The Juneteenth acknowledgement of the fact that July 4th perhaps doesn't tell the entire story is, I think, a solid one, a positive one, and one in going in the right direction. I think it's important, though, when we do this concert historically, not just in this year, not last year, right in the wake of the George Floyd killing, but all the way through. I mean, we've done in this, the last 25 years that I've been doing this concert, we've, you know, done it right after 9/11, months after 9/11. We've done it the, you know, it was the first big public gathering after the marathon bombing. There's, you know, there's all sorts of moments like that that make you understand that it is appropriate to celebrate on the 4th of July, but what's not appropriate is to stick your fingers in your ears and sing patriotic tunes and ignore what is around you. What I believe the message we always try to send, and this year will be no exception, and probably that message will be sent a little more strongly, is that what we celebrate on the 4th of July is an ideal. It's a dream. It's something that was set into motion on the 4th of July. And no, it was not set into motion for everybody who was supposedly covered by it at that point. And that what the 4th of July has to be, rather than just a rah-rah wave the flag moment, is a celebration of pride in being an American and a recommitment to what it truly should mean to be an American in terms of ensuring that the rights that we celebrate apply to all Americans.
So I want to turn to this year's July 4th show. I covered many of your performances down on the Esplanade over the years and kind of became very familiar with some of the beats of the performance and the vibe of the show. Can you tell us a little bit about what folks should expect this year? I believe it's a reduced crowd. You're going to have about 9,000 folks at Tanglewood. What should folks expect if they're coming live or if they're going to tune in on TV or streaming?
Well, yes, we are at 9,000 people. That is the capacity limit for the year for this summer set at Tanglewood by the municipalities, Stockbridge and Lenox, whose grounds of Tanglewood sit between. We would love to be out at full capacity there, but that's not going to happen this year. Nonetheless, 9,000 people feels a lot more than zero people. So we definitely feel like we're moving in the right direction. I think the concert this year, I hope that it will have a lot of things that ring familiar and true to people. I mean, one of the reasons for traditions and celebration is that feeling of going back and being able to say, well, at least that's still here. And I think we all need that perhaps more than ever. We have great patriotic music and the bookends of the concert, the Star Spangled Banner, Stars and Stripes Forever, patriotic sing-along.
Are you going to have the confetti, really, is what I'm asking.
I don't honestly know the answer to whether we're going to have the confetti. But what I do know is that we have John Baptiste coming and joining us, which I was just over the moon about. And then we have Mavis Staples, who's just really an R&B legend. And, and some fun country bluegrass stuff with the Six String Soldiers and a great chorus in the Air Force's Singing Sergeants. I try to make sure that this concert is for everyone who's likely to tune in, that nobody goes, this concert isn't for me, because, the whole idea of this holiday is supposed to be bringing people together in things that they can commonly celebrate.
That's Keith Lockhart, conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra. Keith, I know you said last year you didn't know what to do with yourself having July 4th off. I hope you didn't get used to it, because you're back on the job this year.
I was like so sad that I didn't know what to do with myself. And now I'm going to be like, wow, I really should have enjoyed that moment more while I had it.
That's right. Thanks so much for joining us again, Keith. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Chris. Take care. Happy 4th.
Stay with us. Coming up, summer blockbusters are another seasonal source of joy for so many. And after a year of studios holding films due to the pandemic, there is a lot to choose from this summer. We'll pick out some highlights and talk about what streaming could mean for theaters and the film industry as a whole moving forward. I'm Chris Siderick, and this is Radio Boston.